This podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline, the fastest, easiest, and safest way to bet on all things sports. With March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day all right around the corner, BetOnline has all the latest news, scores, and odds to help you win big. The best part? You'll receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your literal free money. Plus, signing up is a great way to support the podcast you're listening to in your ears right now. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Blue Wire.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup, oh, blocked by James! It's over, Cleveland is a city of champions once again!
The Cleveland Cavaliers select Colin Sexton, Darius Garland.
Here comes Sexton, some rhythm.
And he got it, young ball continues to wear him out!
Do you know what the Cavs fans are calling the Darius Garland, Colin Sexton backcourt?
What?
Sexland.
Oh, that's good.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Network, brought to you by BetOnline.ag. I'm your host, Justin Rowe, with my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
Not too bad, man. We out here, as the kids say.
We out here. We are a 500 team with Andre Drummond. We are a 500 team in the JB Bickerstaff era. How are you feeling?
I'm thinking playoffs, Justin. Let me just say, I've really enjoyed Zavac's bit on Twitter recently, where he's pretending to be a hyper-optimistic fan.
Oh, he's pretending to be me. He's trying to be an exaggerated me, and the side chat with the whole bit has been one of my favorite parts of it. But yes, I'm really, really a fan of this bit, and I'm going to give a little inside for all the people listening to the podcast, a little inside baseball here. But I tweeted 8.5 games out with the eyes emoji after the win against the Wizards, and David immediately jumped on that, as he is wont to do. Immediately after that, I let him in on the secret in the DMs, which is I'm going to keep that thread going after every single Cavs game, no matter how ludicrous it gets, even long after we are eliminated from the playoff picture. I just thought that was a funny bit that made me laugh. And I enjoy the genuine frustration David gets that his biggest tweets are these mock tweets where he's just trying to be a hyper optimist. And he always gets someone sincere being like, this is the type of optimism we need right now.
It's actually mean if you think about it through that prism. Like, David's trying to do a bit at the expense of these poor people who just like the Cavs,
yep,
and don't want to think about it beyond that. Like, we're the morons that like pay close enough attention to be upset about it.
And it's his most popular tweets. That's the best part about it.
Let's start bullying Matt Moore and ask him what the Cavs magic number is.
Oh, that's a great idea. I love that.
Because he loves magic number tweets. He tweeted that Houston clinched the tiebreaker with Utah with 27 games left on the schedule.
Oh, my God.
And he said, and I quote, this period is period big.
You know what? I prefer that to like the, well, this guy's a free agent in 2 years, so let's discuss that. I will accept magic numbers.
I think it's sweet.
It is.
And I'm being patronizing here, but I'm not like lying either. Like, I'm patronizing him, but also I think it's lovely that Matt Moore is like, holy shit.
Hey, you're trying to sell the regular season, right? Like, that's what we need to do.
Oh,
we need to.
Speaking of patronizing, can we talk about Windhorse?
Something
good happens. Fun happens every day in the NBA. It's like it's like someone literally took him in a room and played the podcast we did about how we hate the league is covered, and he's way overcorrecting.
Oh no, he was DMing me. He's let me know that he's making a conscious effort because of our podcast. So I'm glad that we continue to be Case Mason.
Levitard and Bo listen to me. Levitard and Bomani listen to me. Makes only sense that Windhorse would listen to you.
I like that you went with Bo as someone Bo followed by Bomani.
Bo is such a shitbag way to refer to Bomani Jones. It's like it's a familiarity you don't deserve. You know?
No, no. You really, really don't.
I did it with intent.
I do want to launch into the hiring of J.B. Bickerstaff.
Who?
J.B. Bickerstaff.
Oh.
What was the who? Did you honestly not hear me?
No, I was just doing a bit.
Okay. Good God. At least let me in on your bits before you launch into them. Anyways, he is not the interim coach. Happy. He is not the interim coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He is the full-time head coach.
You know, Justin, it was a succession plan. Painstakingly crafted and being executed to its fullest potential right now.
Hey, if there's one thing I know about the Cavs is whatever team building philosophy they have, having a succession plan is always a big part of it. We've drafted back-to-back point guards. You always want to have that next guy waiting in the wing.
It's good for the culture.
I've decided that I am going to, I don't know if stan's the right word, but I'm going to be a Bickerstaff defender here just because
it's exhausting.
It is. It really is. But
another peel back the curtain moment.
Absolutely.
Justin, in our podcast Discord that you can get access to. It's a group chat that you can get access to by leaving a rating, a review for the Chase Down Pod and emailing a screen grab of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. In that very Discord chat, Justin said something along the lines of, I feel like the win against Washington was the first one you could directly attribute to the coach.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My God. My eyes rolled out of my head. I let you have it in the moment.
Carter, feel for the game. He understood that you got to ride the hot hand. He knows what the players want. He knows what they need. And that win was all coaching, Carter. That's exactly what that was.
Colin Sexton got hot in the fourth quarter.
Hey, Darius Garland also had a good fourth quarter. That was a fun game. That was a great fourth quarter for Sexland.
While deriding you, I want to make it clear, I don't want to deride that win, which was super fun.
Yes.
And mostly featured stuff that, you know, is very encouraging moving forward. I just think you're an asshole.
Right. And I also have the memory of a goldfish. That's why I can talk myself into this season being fun at any moment. I just need one
just
win.
Just need 3-4 games in a row.
That's all I really need at this point. Hey, we won back-to-back games. That was great. But no, Mort and I share a philosophy that there is nothing that us fans know less about than coaching. Everyone will critique hires. Nate McMillan got absolutely blasted, or Indy got blasted for hiring him, saying that he's not a very good coach, and he turned out to do a very good job there in Indiana. Doc Rivers has kind of gone back and forth from being a bad coach to a great coach to a bad coach to a great coach. We don't know what we're talking about. And when it comes to rebuilding teams, the guy that starts off the rebuild normally never survives it. And I'm not even going to count Boeheim here. But if Bickerstaff can at least connect with these players and they like him, and it creates a slightly better environment, I will take that for a couple of years here. I'm sure the succession plan for the next step is already in the works, but if Bickerstaff can at least get them to the hump, which I think he's capable of doing, I will be happy with that.
What I'm hearing out of you, Justin, is that the Cavs are just 2 games into the rebuild.
We are just 2 games into the rebuild.
So they're really tracking really well. Given that they're 2 games into the rebuild and already sitting at a 500 team in the Cavaliers rebuilding era. So that's really cool. I want to double back to this whole succession plan, because we haven't been mean enough about this.
We have not.
I just find either they're lying to us and are jerks, or like, who in the Cavaliers organization really thinks that they're thinking 8 years ahead of the game?
Here's the thing, Carter. It's the funny thing about spin. You would, in an ideal world, how you spin something is supposed to make you feel better. if what they are saying is accurate, that actually makes me feel worse. That makes it more understandable. But you know what it is? It is something that you can say to the fans that are less plugged in, that don't follow this on a day-to-day basis. And I feel like that's something people can buy. It's us, the sickos, that are always going to be there that will roll our eyes at this. But I feel in general that that's a message that plays, even though there's no reason for it to.
Yeah, I just can't wait for the reporting leak that they were actually planning on promoting Mike Garrity 14 years from now. It's all in Kobe Altman's 27-year plan for the franchise. What the fuck are they trying to sell us here? Like, lie to me better if you're going to lie to me. And if it's the truth, that's worse. So it's just hilarious that they – and I do think, if anything, it's just a way to justify giving Bickerstaff his, you know – is not interim label, which, yeah, by the way, doesn't mean anything.
No, I mean, every Cavs coach is interim.
Even if it wasn't, like, if they don't like him, they'll fire him just like everyone else, especially since they're not paying Beeline anymore.
One thing I do want to point out when it comes to Bickerstaff, a criticism of him has been in the past that he's leaned heavily on veterans and sometimes not played young guys as much as you'd want for a rebuilding team. This is also a guy that has been an interim coach twice and for large stretches of those seasons. And when you're an interim coach and you're trying to get that head coaching job, going with the more proven options and doing everything you can to get that contract is something that's really understandable. The other thing with the Cavs is there isn't a veteran option for their young guys. Their young guys are all guards. The only real change I've seen with the rotation when it comes to the guards is that Dellavedova is actually playing less. It seems like he's giving Dante Exum more of an opportunity, which I think is something you and I are both happy about. But I'm not going to freak out over those type of things until they actually start occurring here, because otherwise you're stressing yourself out for no reason.
Yeah, I mean, and this is an important thing to note. I think you're taking us to a good spot of, like, we're not here to, you know, shit on JB Bickerstaff. Like, we don't even know him. As we've noted, Mort correctly notes that we have very little idea and insight into what goes on with the coach. Really, all we can care about from a fan perspective, based on the information we have, is whether guys are playing hard and like the guy.
Yeah.
You know, like, for Beeline, like, okay, we knew that this was failing. You hear chatter, you hear public, you know, you read articles, and okay, they hate this guy, they don't respect him, and he's out of his depth. Okay, let's move on. Bickerstaff, I'll be pretty surprised if we'll see any reporting like that. You know, if anything, his negatives as a coach will primarily be just being milquetoast and not particularly impactful on building the program and just kind of doing coach stuff, and that's it.
He's likely a below average NBA coach. He's Cavs an NBA coach, unlike Beeline.
Yeah. Yeah, Cavs fans don't know this, actually, because all their hires are hilarious. But most coaches don't matter. And it's really much more about, you know, front office infrastructure, player development, and culture, some of which is set by the coach, some of which isn't. You know, there's a lot more Scotty Brooks in the world than you'd think.
Mm-hmm.
That can win with talent and don't win with bad talent, you know?
And it's also not one guy that's coaching. It's often the importance of the entire coaching staff. A lot of those tasks and responsibilities are delegated amongst the staff, and we're never really allowed in the loop on what those delegations are, who has what responsibility. But we just assign it all to one guy that we view as being in control of everything.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get frustrated with Bickerstaff as time goes on. And I'm sure we won't have all the context. I do feel for the guy. He's been an interim coach twice. Taking over midseason is pretty impossible to put your stamp on a team beyond getting them to play harder. Obviously the Cavs have a very notable exception to that in Ty Lue, who took over for Blatt and ended up winning a title. But the Cavs didn't fundamentally change their identity.
No.
They just played for a guy who wasn't an asshole. So I don't know. They're in a really weird spot with this coaching situation. I mean, I guess the charitable way to look at it is if they do keep him around, at least you're building towards something. But they'd better be damn sure they're right, because we really, well, you know, what I guess they can't afford, because they're already at the bottom, both as an organization and as a raw, as a, you know, product on the floor. Mm-hmm. But they, it feels like they really can't afford to be in January of 2021 and think, ah, shit, we might have to fire JB.
God.
Oh, you know what I mean? And that feels not unlikely, and that is a problem.
No, and that also goes to the constant factors here, or at least the consistent factors, which is the veterans that played a part in this getting as bad as it did, the issues with the front office that are likely still going to be in place. And it's going to take time to realize, before we realize whether or not those factors are changing, whether or not the veterans are playing a little harder, whether or not the front office acts more normally. These are things that we can't know until we actually cross that bridge. I do want to get to Tristan Thompson's quote, though, about Bickerstaff. Did you have a chance to see it?
I would like you to read it to me, because I don't remember exactly what it was.
All right, and we also do this for people listening to the podcast, so that...
yeah, I was kind of wondering why you were... took that angle, but I like you.
You know what? I wanted a break, because I had talked for a little while, and you know me. I have trouble talking for an extended period of time before I start slurring and falling apart. So I wanted to give myself a chance to get a breath, and now you've deprived me of that opportunity.
Yeah, well, you didn't need to monologue so much in your self-defense, but it's fine.
So Tristan's quote is, he can read people, he can read their energy, and is good with personalities. That's how the NBA is. The coaches that are successful in this league are coaches who know how to relate to the players, and if they don't give a player relationship, they are usually they are usually one smart effing coach. Guys like JB, guys like Ty Lue, Doc Rivers, those guys, they know how to deal with players, talk to players, and have a relationship. Even Steve Kerr. Those guys know. They know the players, who they can push, who they can yell at, and who they have to love, and who they have to criticize with love. That's what the league is. It's changing.
I'm going to get in trouble here.
Oh, my God.
But I wonder what was different from Steve Kerr to those other guys that made him say, even Steve Kerr. Yeah, even that guy.
It's an important conversation, Carter. I'm glad we're having it.
Oh, I'm just saying. Some subtext to be picked up on. Don't cancel me, please.
That kind of reflects on Bayline, right?
I feel like anytime anyone gives this kind of quote, it very rarely has much to do with the coach that's coming in, and everything to do with the coach who's on the way out. It's clear he couldn't relate. I mean, I know we're trying to mostly move forward here, but I do think it's important. We haven't potted since before he actually formally stepped down.
Yeah.
I think we should play a little blame game.
Okay.
So if we are assessing failure, of the Beilein era in practice, assuming that the hire was going to happen. So I would like to extricate Dan Gilbert and Coby Altman from this conversation.
Okay.
And more do an autopsy on what actually happened. What percentage of the blame would you put on the players, and what percentage would you put on Beilein?
Man, I think it's a pretty even split.
I'm glad you feel this way, because I do think much more anti-Beilein stuff happening. And it's also, partially our fault, because some of his anecdotes are hilarious. Like trying to get them to practice on Christmas.
Bickerstaff isn't scheduling a practice on Christmas.
My favorite part of that, when I was joking about that, was all these moron tryhards getting in my mentions going, I don't really see the big problem with that. Are you kidding me? It's practice.
Did you see Christmas. the quote from a West Virginia player who said that Beilein, when he was there, appealed the NCAA because you're supposed to give the team a day off between practices. And he convinced them that if there's 24 hours between practices, that counts as a day off. So they would practice 7 days a week.
Insane. What a guy.
Yeah.
But I wonder how he had trouble
with time management, going from seven practices a week to one or two a month, which you get in the NBA.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about, I'm sorry, I totally derailed us right as you started to answer, but why would you apportion blame the way you did?
So I think it's the responsibility of the players and the veterans in particular to handle these issues better. I think the way that they reacted with Kevin Love's outburst, even Tristan Thompson when he had his outburst, which he walked back and said the right things. But when you react in that way, it empowers the younger guys to kind of act up on their own as well, to question the coach. And when you don't have that buy-in, even if it's a flawed game plan, you're not going to execute that flawed game plan in any meaningful way and actually give it a fair test run. Obviously, Boeheim has a huge part in this blame. Zach Lowe actually said on the Lebatard show that the Cavs front office, people in the front office said in August and September that the warning signs were there and they felt like this was going to fail. Keep in mind, training camp had not started. Preseason had not started. He had not had his preseason meltdown yet. It was just based on how he ran summer league, almost killed Dylan Windler, and just the things he was saying. So I mean, that we're not talking about the front office, but holy shit, if that's the case, that's a nightmare. But I really do think that the professionalism from the players was basically non-existent in a lot of these circumstances. And I know it's the tendency to put the blame on the guy that is on the way out or is out and try to absolve the guys that are still here, because those are the guys that we have to still believe in as fans. But they do share some of the blame here for sure.
I think the word to use is petulant.
Yeah.
You hear rumblings like, Love didn't like the way that Boeheim was handing out offensive rebounding assignments. So instead of crashing or just getting back, he would just loaf up and down the court in protest.
The greatest 3 second violation ever.
Yeah, no kidding. Like the thugs songs in the locker room. Like, I just, like, you read that Shams, Varden, Kelsey report, and there's some quote from a player, like, it was them trying to, or maybe it wasn't a quote from a player, but so they were trying to make the best of an awkward situation. Is that you making the best of it?
No, it's not.
Of course not. You're doing it to giggle and undercut the guy. And
which, sorry to cut you off here, but one thing we talked about immediately after that situation was, if the players don't feel he's sincere, or if this is something that truly bothers him, them, he has to go. And it was clear that they, and it came out after he stepped down, but that they did not feel like he was actually apologetic. He explained himself, but didn't really apologize.
They felt like it was a Freudian slip.
Right, right. They felt like it was the old man autocorrect, where it's, you usually say this word here. did you mean to say this? And it was such a bad look.
You know, when Altman's doing his due diligence, checking in with the players, I hope they were honest with him and didn't pretend like they weren't upset and then clearly were, you know. It's just like they just didn't ever make it workable. Both me and you had heard about the thug thing well before this report came out. And I think
the music, you mean?
Yeah. Yes. Them playing the music with the word thug in it to basically mock and taunt Boeheim whenever he was in the room.
Which I'm so glad that anecdote's out there, because I've been laughing at it for 2 months.
Yeah, it's, well, first off, it's hilarious. I think it's very really important enough. It is so aggressively passive aggressive that, you know, hats off. But the second we heard that, I feel like both of us, like, I don't know if you go back and listen to older pods, but you can definitely hear us talking about Boeheim in the past tense. Like, well before he considered stepping down.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we just kind of knew it was over. And you can't come back from, you know, open disrespect across the locker room veteran supported. They tried to ship the vets out. It didn't work really. And yeah, it was just, so yeah, I think the more I think about it, I'm leaning more towards 60-40 Beeline players, because everything the players did that was petulant was pretty self-inflicted harm on Beeline's part.
Yeah.
From the, like, yes, you would expect professionals to handle stuff better, but also they shouldn't have to deal with this. They shouldn't have to deal with being called thugs in a film session. They shouldn't have to deal with a coach trying to do two-a-days or schedule a practice on Christmas Day.
That's the thing is, okay, so he initiated it. They reacted poorly. He did not adjust to them acting poorly and kept doing his thing. Like, there's just a lack of self-awareness there that I think is glaring.
Yeah, and honestly, it makes you wonder, what the hell happened in these interviews? Did they not ask? Did he? I mean, he apparently consulted with Billy Donovan, Brad Stevens. They must have told him this. And again, like, this just comes down to, like, I'm sorry. I know it's a little problematic. I'm sure if I were in the workplace, this would get me in some trouble. I'm not in the workplace. This is the problem with hiring an old man. Like, old people, he's been doing his job one way for so long that asking him to change, even if he said he did in his interview process, it just, when people are up against it, they dig down on what they believe in when they've been as successful as someone like Beeline's been in his college career. And I just think they should have seen this coming. You know, you hoped he would be a little bit more flexible, but that's just not really what college coaches have been historically, especially uber successful ones that have coached at power programs. And yeah, it just hasn't worked. It didn't work. It was a failure. Altman and Gilbert and whoever was involved in that process should really be, I hope that they're being really hard on themselves in their postmortems. Let's just say that much.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think now, regardless of what you feel about Bickerstaff, he at least does have that NBA experience. He is an NBA coach. Whether or not he's a good or bad one, we will find out. But I think the problems that may come up with Bickerstaff are more normal problems. It's not going to be, as I said, he's not going to be scheduling a practice on Christmas. So I do want to move on from the Beeline thing and kind of get into what we've seen so far in the Bickerstaff era. And one adjustment that I noticed through these two games is there has been a change in the rotation, and it's a subtle one. Darius Garland was always the first guard to check out, and then he would run the second unit. We are now seeing that Kevin Porter Jr. has checked in both games for Sexton in the first quarter and played out there with Garland and the starters. Then they come out after 9 minutes. I want to get your kind of quick thoughts on that, and do you think that that's something that they'll continue playing with moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I don't think I feel very strongly about it, other than KPJ being the one to be getting those minutes as opposed to an Exum or a Deli.
That's a good sign.
Like, I really do think that's really what's interesting here is KPJ playing with starters, playing starters minutes against starters, mixed results in these first two games, gets tossed against Washington and has pretty much a nightmare experience against Miami. But, you know, I think it's fine. I think that it makes sense, and on Porter's trajectory, that he would do this. I mean, obviously he's pressing a little bit too hard there, but
yeah,
you know, the guard rotation can only kind of work so many ways
right now. That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, those three guards are going to be playing 28 minutes a game at least. That they're all going to be getting a lot of time, and they all have to learn how to play with one another. And I think what we're seeing out of Colin Sexton with his improved passing is making it easier to kind of play around with different things. I actually tweeted the salary before the podcast, but over the last 15 games, so that's basically since the start of January, Sexton's assist percentage when Garland is off the floor is 25.6. That's That's really, really encouraging. And with Garland on the floor, it's 15.7, which is higher than it was even last season on average. So Sexton's learning how to create opportunities and what opportunities his athleticism will create and how to capitalize on that. He's doing that no matter who he's on the floor with. And if he is starting to play a more unselfish game, that allows you to kind of, hey, you're going to run the offense here for extended stretches with the bench, with the starters. You can stagger them in different ways.
Yeah. In the month of February, Sexton has 4, 7, 2, 3, 6, 3, 2, and 9 assists, a handy 4.7 a game. Mm-hmm. Obviously that 9 assist game really throws the curve, but heading into, so he's got 3 games with at least 5 assists. He had had 5 total games with at least 5 assists. Mm-hmm. Heading into the month of February, he's already got 3 here.
Yeah, it's really encouraging.
It's very encouraging.
And here's what I like about it. So his touches, like his usage has been the same basically throughout the season. His touches have gone up in January and February. It was 56 a game the first few months of the season. And then in January, sorry, I'm going off memory. January went up to 65 a game. It's up to 70 now. If he was getting those touches early in the season, if he was getting 70 touches in November, December, and playing the way he was, there would have been a full-on riot amongst his teammates. But now that he's actually starting to develop and understand the game and what defenders are giving him a little bit more, it's actually functioning. Like, it's working well. And you have Garland, who's bringing the ball up. I believe he's at 5.5 assists, basically since the last 15 games or so. But he's coming up, he's running the offense, he's getting them into sets. But Sexton's understanding that I can get by my primary defender fairly easily. And now instead of being blocked at the rim, you're seeing dump off passes, driving kick opportunities. He's reading what the defense is giving him, and it's making him more efficient. It's creating opportunities for teammates. And it's nothing advanced. It's just an understanding of what's happening on the floor because he plays at 100 miles an hour. So it takes him a little while to figure these things out.
Yeah, I'm fairly encouraged. I think he's playing fairly well. I'm not super interested in. I guess I'm not super confident that this is some corner being turned. You know, like I think he's pretty much. I don't think we're gonna see Sexton average 5 assists a game the rest of the season.
I think we can see 4 if he's at 4 with what he's doing.
4 is getting close to functional.
I'm pretty damn happy with 4 as from a combo guard. Like that is what you see from guys like Gary Harris or like a Lou Williams type. And I think that if he's at that and he stays this efficient, I'm very happy with that to close out the year, because that's longer than what we saw last year from him. Like that is basically starting from the beginning of January, where these assist rates are starting to go up. And as we've mentioned before, he's not going to have an advanced understanding of how to create shots for guys, but his athleticism and what he's able to do offensively is going to create opportunities for other guys because he draws that much attention.
Yeah, I agree. I don't have much to say just because I really want to ride it out, but I have been encouraged by his play. And obviously Miami was a bloodbath, but Washington was very encouraging for Garland as well. So here's hoping that I think if we're looking for anything for the rest of the year, it's the three guards, the three young guards, finding some synergy and contributing to some winning basketball. Yeah. We've seen some signs. That's as far as I'm willing to go right now.
But no, that's fair. Signs. But at the same time, I think in to be fair is we have to, because we've criticized Sexton when he's had short stretches of struggling. I think it's worth noting, especially because we are now starting to get to the point where it's, hey, this is a 15 game sample where he's been doing this. I think that's noteworthy and deserves some praise for sure.
You know what I'm significantly more interested in talking about?
Garland?
Porter. Andre Drummond's minutes.
That's fair. Yeah, no.
It's really interesting because on one hand, you had someone on Twitter being a little sensationalistic saying he's falling out of the rotation. He's only played 22 minutes in the last two games, and he ended up playing
25 against Miami. Well, no, it was in the one game.
Well, no, because Atlanta, he also played 22 minutes.
Gotcha.
In both their wins, mind you. And I think I don't know what I or anyone else would have expected other than this, where whatever center is playing better while the Cavs are playing better, we'll get more minutes between him and Thompson. That's the thing about this situation where you really, really, really cannot afford to bench Tristan Thompson if he's having a good game.
Right. No, absolutely.
It's just, it's not where the team's at. And it's not where Thompson is as a player. Like, he's not some scrub that you can just say, we think Andre's going to opt into his player option next year, so we got to make sure he gets to at least 32 minutes. So you're stuck at 16. Sorry, buddy. Like, Thompson's going to expect at least 20 minutes a game on any given night. Mm-hmm. And by extension, that leaves Drummond with only 28. I mean, this is going to be an adjustment for him. I think he's going to
unless really... we keep seeing more minutes with them together, which I don't think either of us love.
I certainly hope not. He has never played in his career less than 29.7 minutes per game, other than his rookie year where he played 21. So let's just say I don't think he's going to be near these numbers for the rest of this season while Tristan Thompson's on the roster. Tristan's just too good to justify sitting him when he's not playing well. Now, I do think there's going to be games where Tristan doesn't seem to have it or seems a little worn down and Drummond's on fire and, you know, distributing. He's made some really nice passes early in his Cavs career. I've noticed it, especially in the outlet variety.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe if Drummond's really feeling it and he's controlling the boards and playmaking and finishing and cleaning up around the basket, and he might play 34 minutes and Tristan's stuck with 14. But to expect 30 minutes every night for Drummond, I think is actually foolhardy. And to expect that is to set yourself up to be wrong.
I mean, this is why we gave up a second round pick for him, right? We're testing things out. Hey, you're going to have to outplay Tristan Thompson to get those minutes. We need to test to see how you fit in our system, how you connect with the young guys. He's going to need to actually play hard, which I think he has been. One thing worth noting is he did get in foul trouble in the Washington game in the first half. That cut into his minutes a little bit. But I do think it's still a noteworthy trend. When Tristan's playing well, his minutes are going to suffer.
There's only 48 minutes a game at center. I just don't know what to tell people.
Right. No, they're absolutely going to suffer. And then we saw against Miami, he was laying off Bam Adebayo, and that was creating passing lanes, cutting lanes. Bam had a lot of space to operate. And these are the type of things that we're playing with and experimenting on. Hey, do we want to invest in Andre Drummond? This is why you give up a second round pick that likely isn't going to matter because it's the Warriors pick and they're likely going to be good again. And we might get a year and a half to test this out. And if he can't outplay Tristan Thompson, or if there are still these glaring issues, that's better than, okay, we threw him a contract this summer because we had cap space and there's no one else to spend it on. It's in both parties' best interest for him to opt in and to try things out this summer, because there's not a lot of teams that have cap space. I mean, other than the Cavs option, you have Detroit, which I don't think he's going back to Detroit. You have Memphis, who has big men and likely isn't going to be throwing Drummond a contract. And I think there's one other team, if that. So it makes most sense for him to stick it out, opt in, and then we can test things out next season.
Yeah, I think so. You said opt in, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
I hope I did.
I think you said opt out, but also my brain is a little fried. I think that's kind of what I would like to see at this point. I don't think that the only way I want to see Drummond opt out is if Giannis wins a title and signs a supermax, because all of a sudden, cap space matters again. and bad contracts that people want to get off of matter again, because the whole free agency landscape changes a lot.
There's a realistic chance that both Tristan and Andre get signed and traded this summer.
Which is fine.
I think it's possible. And if you get anything in that trade, I think it's ultimately a win. It's a good asset management, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that, and honestly, I would need to double check the free agency slate to see how Giannis signing would affect what the Cavs would do with all their open room. So probably talking out of my ass a little bit there, but ultimately, I think that it makes sense to me that you would kind of just want him to opt in, see what you got, because you're not going to do much better with that cap space. And we just saw that
he's a really good player. He's probably the best player on the team.
Cap space doesn't buy you as much as it used to.
No.
At least in the short term.
I think that, in all fairness, I do believe that that was a this season thing just because of how poor the free agent crop is. I do think expiring contracts next year will have a little bit more value.
Sure. And he would be one. And an opt-in is what I'm saying.
Correct.
I just would rather keep him because I don't think I don't think a pot of gold is coming to the Cavaliers this offseason. And I guess you could make a very fair case that, hey, the Cavs are making assumptions that might not hold true. Maybe there will be some mega deal that they could have come in and, you know, sharked off a couple first round picks if they just had kept the space. I also think it's worth noting. I think they made this trade assuming they're going to have a better chance of moving Kevin Love this summer.
Yeah, and no, 100%.
Speaking of things that would change if Giannis wins a title and re-signs, Kevin Love becomes 200% more tradable? 300?
Yeah. Well, I think it's also worth noting that there was the Lloyd report, and it had been mentioned before, though, that Portland had offered Whiteside and Bazemore for Kevin Love. So straight up expirings, you didn't have to offer a pick up for Portland to get off the contract. So I think we now have somewhat of a baseline. And I do agree. I think it's going to be easier to move Kevin Love this summer no matter what. I guess there's an outside chance that him and Drummond like playing with one another. They do fit well. And that they give next season a little bit of a shot, which, hey, that would be fun. You have Garland and KPJ coming back with a full off season, bigger, stronger, more experienced. Sexton is going to keep improving because the one thing I know about Sexton, whatever the hell his ceiling is, he's going to hit it. And that's a great trait for a player to have. And then you have the pot of gold that you just took a big shit on, which is Dylan Windler, who will be in the mix without a coach trying to kill him.
Easy. You know I believe in Dylan. Get well, buddy. I'm sorry.
Boots.
I'm sorry that that the coach that should have taken care of you has ruined your career.
Yeah, I'm sorry that mean old man ran you into dust.
For a summer league win.
Oh, well, that's the funniest thing was that they mentioned that the Cavs were so
gassed. What were they practicing, Justin?
They were so gassed from the two-a-days that they couldn't even compete in the games.
What were they trying to – was he trying to teach the system? Did anyone tell him these guys weren't going to play on the team?
I don't know. Thank God Darius Garland was not on that team. Same with KPJ, but Garland in particular, like he was.
Darius would have been a fine powder at the end of that.
He would be on an iron lung at that point. Like you could tell he was wearing down, and I don't think anybody needed this All-Star break more than him. And it's nice to see his efficiency kind of come up in these two games since the break. And I really hope that lasts for the season. But my God, if he was in summer league, he might have died.
Yep. Thank God.
Thank God for that period of our lives being over and just looking forward to the new terrors that await. Do you have any parting thoughts here, Carter, before we wrap this thing up?
You're running solo without me the rest of the week. I'm going to be in Seattle on a work trip. Thank you so much for constantly filling in when I abandon you.
And another trip that isn't Winnipeg. I am taking note of this, you know.
Yeah, there's a thriving esports scene in Winnipeg, as far as I've heard.
Yeah, that's because you don't do your research. You don't do your research on the Cavs, and you don't do it on Winnipeg. We're all about those esports, I think.
That's absolutely fair and absolutely correct. The Cavs are about to get their teeth kicked in for the next 2 weeks. Versus Miami, versus Philly, at New Orleans, versus Indiana, versus Utah, versus Boston,
at least
Boston,
Indiana lost
Denver.
By like 45 today. That might
So they'll be pissed. Great. Versus San Antonio through March 8th. So the Cavs will likely not win a game until March 10th when they go to at Charlotte or at Chicago, at Charlotte, at Atlanta on a six-game road trip. So everything's terrible. All the goodwill from the dead coach bounce has been lost. Go Cavs.
You forgot my bet online safe bet that the Cavs were going to win two games of that stretch. We already got one, Carter, and I'm always right, as you know.
Yeah!
I should have worded that like a David tweet. I'm looking forward to more of those as we tailspin into another tough stretch of the schedule. But I will miss you, buddy. Have fun in Seattle. Go listen to Nirvana or whatever people do there. Esports, apparently. How about that? Want to thank Carter. Want to thank all of our listeners. Remember, if you want to support the podcast, the best way you can do that is by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, and resubscribe to help cook those books. You can also support us directly by subscribing to the Chase Down Premium. Just 99 cents for your first month, $5 a month after that. Give us a shot. I got another youth report that I'll likely be recording later tonight. So that will be making its return there. We also got breaking news pods and tons of fun stuff that we're working on for that. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. So thanks again to Carter. Thanks to our listeners. Until next time, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.